It's the morning show. I'm Shereen Seward in for Kate Archer-Kent. Overdoses are rising both statewide and in the United States, but new research suggests that focusing on harm reduction and increasing treatment options can both be crucial strategies in fighting the overdose epidemic. Join in this discussion on what can be done, especially in rural Wisconsin, where treatment options are scarce. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Randy Brown is a professor in the Department of Family Medicine and Community Health at UW Hospital. He is an author of a recent study looking at the relationship between methamphetamine and opioid use with non-fatal drug overdoses. Dr. Brown, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you. Appreciate you having me.
The study found non-fatal overdoses are more common for people using both methamphetamine and opioids than opioids alone. Why is that happening?
That seems to be primarily driven by the fact that fentanyl is also getting into the supply of other drugs like methamphetamine. And so when you read about overdoses in this study, those are primarily due to overdosing on that opioid that's present in the methamphetamine supply.
Can you explain a little bit about why fentanyl is so deadly and why this is having such a big impact?
Absolutely. It's been an increasing scourge over the last five-ish years, and it's a highly potent opioid, roughly 100 plus times that of morphine. An amount the size of two small granules is enough to cause an overdose. And the fact that it's present in so many other drugs besides heroin is really, creating a problem. Besides things being marketed as heroin or methamphetamine that have that product in it, there are also counterfeit tablets out there, pills that are made to look like a prescription medication, such as morphine or Percocet or Xanax. And those counterfeit tablets also are increasingly containing fentanyl or substances much like fentanyl.
When people are buying those tablets, those counterfeit medications, do they know what's in it necessarily?
Not necessarily, no.
That's interesting. Why are people using meth and opioids together? And here's my thinking on this. They're two very different drugs. So if you're using meth, it's one kind of feeling that they get. And something like heroin is a completely different feeling that they get. Why both?
Good question. And I think, we have some to learn on that front. And so what I say here comes from, speaking with patients and some, research where people have been interviewed. And one is that there's a perception that methamphetamine is safer being a stimulant. There was a perception, particularly before fentanyl started infiltrating the supply, that, well, if I use methamphetamine, I'm less likely to die due to an overdose. Mm. So an increasingly common pattern of use, particularly in our rural areas, is this movement back and forth between methamphetamine and opioid use. That being part of the reason, also perhaps part of the reason, is in an effort to avoid becoming physically dependent on the opioid, which is a really difficult situation to come out of because of the withdrawal syndrome. Coming off of opioids is really, really uncomfortable and difficult to get through. That's part of it. And then also, of course, is just the fact that the methamphetamine supply nationally has just grown so much within the last 10 years. In years past, when methamphetamine was much more common on the West Coast and some pockets of the Midwest, the manufacture was primarily local. Where now with the current methamphetamine trade, it's coming from south of the border from large labs there and a much larger supply.
I was going to ask you that, where things are coming from, and it sounds like there was a shift there. We're talking about the relationship between meth and opioids. Dr. Randy Brown is a consulting physician in addictive medicine and director of the UW Addiction Medicine Fellowship. Randy, the research says methamphetamine use has been endemic in the Western U.S. for decades, and more recent data suggests it has spread to other regions. So when did methamphetamine use begin to really show an uptick here in Wisconsin?
Oh, we really started seeing a pretty hyperbolic rise just within the last 5 years, where reports, and this comes from law enforcement reports around methamphetamine involvement, and those rose nearly 500% just over the last 5 years. So it's really been a fairly recent time frame that our state, and then places that historically hadn't seen it very much, like New England, have really started seeing it more and more.
How does it spread from one region to the next? It feels like a wave that goes across the country.
Yeah, you know, and again, with the much larger supply that's coming from much larger labs, is, you know, for the most part, kind of taking, you know, typical sort of conduits, you know, your interstates and things along those lines. And, you know, another place where, you know, I think we've got a bit to learn so far as how that goes, but it's less common these days, again, for it to be getting produced and distributed locally. That still happens, but it's the bulk of the supply is coming from these larger organizations.
The research studied participants from January 2018 to March 2020. This was before COVID-19 spread widely in the U.S. How is the pandemic affecting the rate of meth and opioid use when you look at it now?
Well, overdoses have been continuing to rise. In fact, in 1 year over the pandemic, we topped 100,000 overdose deaths. And so it didn't create a huge amount of problem with drug supply and access to it. But what it did create was a situation where accessing treatment was more difficult. Accessing harm reduction services and education around overdose prevention was more difficult. People were more likely to be using alone, which is a particular risk for overdose when there isn't someone else there that can recognize that and intervene.
You talked about harm reduction services. What specifically are you talking about?
So there are a variety of services that different organizations can provide to reduce the likelihood of harm coming from drug use, be it injecting or smoking. But I think most people most commonly think about harm reduction services targeting injection substance use, where organizations may distribute clean syringes and clean supplies for drug preparation. They'll educate people around the use of those supplies and deliver that messaging, you know, new works, clean works every time to prevent infectious disease spread. They'll also engage in education around overdose prevention. And so teach people who use about how to recognize an overdose. Again, don't use alone, keep on hand overdose reversal agent, naloxone, commonly known as Narcan, which is a brand name. And so they do all those kinds of things to help people who are using drugs maintain their health.
When we talk about those harm reduction strategies, there are people, critics, who say that when we promote those kinds of strategies, we're just promoting drug use. What would you say to those critics?
You know, I mean, I can see how folks might feel that way intuitively. However, the literature bears out that where these programs are present, we don't see increases in drug use, and we see actually some very positive outcomes associated with the presence of these organizations, including reductions in public use and public overdose. These are organizations that are also helpful in connecting people who use to treatment. when they're ready to go that route. So while, yes, that is a position that's out there, and I think to some may seem intuitive, it actually doesn't seem to pan out that way in reality.
Randy Brown is a professor in the Department of Family Medicine and Community Health at UW Hospital. Join in 800-642-1234. I'm Shereen Seward. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It's The Morning Show. I'm Shereen Seward. We return now to our discussion on methamphetamine and opioid use and the increase in the number of overdoses reported both statewide and elsewhere. Join in on what can be done to combat this pervasive issue from a public health perspective. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Randy Brown is a professor in the Department of Family Medicine and Community Health at UW Hospital. Randy, you say early response systems need to track non-fatal overdoses to reduce overdose deaths. What monitoring should happen?
Good question. So I think the primary idea behind that is gaining a better understanding of what substances are creating health issues of importance in our communities. And so, testing of substances themselves, getting data around substances involved in overdoses when people report can give us a better sense of the kinds of services that need to be present in those communities to prevent further future harms related.
Opioid clinics sometimes opt to quit Suboxone treatment if a patient is found to be using meth. What kind of effect does that have for the people who use both?
Boy, great question. And, I think the field is coming to recognize some of the challenges with that thinking. That certainly is something that's still common. However, I think there's getting to be more a consciousness around those really being separate issues that need to be clinically managed in different sorts of ways. So for example, if I'm following a patient in my clinic and they're taking a buprenorphine preparation like Suboxone, and they're taking it as prescribed, and I'm following them for their other use, and their, for example, urine testing is negative for opioids but is positive for methamphetamine, and they're taking their buprenorphine, that's a piece of data that indicates to me that their opioid use disorder or addiction is being managed effectively, but that there may be an issue with methamphetamine and that needs to be dealt with in a different way. That said, ongoing use of methamphetamine may also make it more challenging for an individual to follow through with some of the requirements of a specialist program, like an opioid treatment program, where then if they're not, attending to their counseling visits, they're not reporting for their dosing, can lead to a situation where they may be, this is referred to administratively, discharged for reasons like that. My hope would be that, in a setting of adherence and some degree of methamphetamine use, those administrative discharges would be, getting to be less common for reasons I described.
We're talking about the relationship between methamphetamine and opioids in non-fatal overdoses with Dr. Randy Brown, director of UW's Center for Addictive Disorders. I have to wonder, are we figuring out what works? It sounds like treating opioid addiction is so difficult. What do we know now that we didn't know 5 years ago?
Well, so far as treating opioid use disorders or opioid addiction, we can be quite successful with the medications that are available. We know that those save lives, particularly methadone and buprenorphine preparations. And so, you know, we're in a good spot so far as that and behavioral treatment. However, you know, to the point of the study we're talking about, a lot of times that's not accessible for our rural residents, and that's a really big, you know, part of the problem. I mean, the opioid treatment programs that you alluded to tend to be more concentrated in more populated areas. And so our rural residents most often won't have ready access to that. And so we really need to lean on sort of more accessible and general healthcare providers, such as general psychiatrists and primary care providers, family medicine and internal medicine, to gain some familiarity with that treatment. We're a little bit further behind when it comes to treating methamphetamine use disorder or methamphetamine addiction, because there aren't currently any FDA-approved medications that effectively help folks move toward recovery from a methamphetamine use disorder. There are a number of medications with approvals, you know, for other diagnoses that have had some impact, but it hasn't been nearly as dramatic as it has been for medications for opioid use disorder. And methamphetamine use disorder also typically will require fairly prolonged periods of counseling to move someone toward more sustained remission or recovery, which again is a really difficult thing to access and keep people going to that are living in rural areas and may have to travel some distance to get to a program like that.
We talked a little bit earlier about reversal drugs, naloxone, which most people recognize as Narcan. That's kind of the common, you know, the common name for it. I'm curious about your take on this. In Waukesha County, people can now get Narcan through a grant-funded vending machine. What are your thoughts on that approach? Do you think it's a model for other communities to follow?
Absolutely. And amen. Yes. Mm-hmm. I feel like naloxone really ought to have the sort of presence that, say, automated external defibrillators do for heart attack or myocardial infarction. Those should just be, you know, out there, you know, and widely available so that when an overdose situation is recognized, a bystander can intervene efficiently. Because in that setting, seconds truly do count when it comes to providing that rescue and preventing mortality or, you know, other devastating consequences.
How effective is Narcan?
Well, it's very effective. I mean, it sort of goes to the same receptor that heroin or fentanyl does and kicks it off of there. The challenge these days, again, is fentanyl's sheer potency. And so I'd encourage listeners to educate themselves also on overdose recognition and reversal you know, see about Narcan as well. But with that potency, we're frequently seeing that more than one dose of Narcan may need to be administered. And that some care and follow-up may be required. So having more than one on hand and being sure to call emergency services are important aspects of addressing overdose.
In the 60 seconds we have left, I want to ask you for final thoughts. How can healthcare professionals be better prepared to treat people addicted to opioids and methamphetamine? What can they do to improve?
Well, you know, I think, you know, an issue that we hear frequently from patients is that sometimes, you know, very often there's a lot of stigma attached to substance use, and just encourage healthcare providers to approach folks that are dealing with these issues with compassion. You know, even if it's someone that's reported repeatedly for health services related to their substance use, because we know that on average, someone with a use disorder will be struggling with it for close to 10 years before they access treatment, and they may require those you know, repeated contacts to get connected and to make those decisions to follow through. So I just encourage folks to approach each of those visits with compassion and an open mind.
Thank you, Randy. Randy, thank you so much for sharing this with us today.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks so much for having me.
Randy Brown, a professor in the Department of Family Medicine and Community Health at UW Hospital. Up ahead, we speak with two Wisconsin experts about homeschooling. Join in, 800-642-1234. I'm Shereen Seward. News Update is next on the Ideas Network.